I'm Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. I'm very pleased to have with me today in the studio Mr. Mario Cutajar. He's a senior lecturer too in the Department of Maltese at the university's junior college and a part-timer in the Faculty of Education at the university here on campus. At the university junior college, he lectures on Maltese literature and practical criticism, while in the Faculty of Education here, he lectures BEd students on research methods, classroom management, and school experience. He's written a number of articles and papers, including one on assessment and educational administration and management, which has delivered these papers at international conferences. His M.Ed research was the Maltese SEC and Evaluation, and he has presented also the paper SEC and Evaluation of the Oral and Paper 2 Components at the second International ACEAB Conference, which was held in Malta in 2002, and other papers in plenty of other conferences as well. He was co-researcher, co-author and co-presenter with Dr. Charles Briffer on the 2004 ACEAB Fiji Conference, for example. In this paper, he analysed the systems of assessing Maltese literature and tried to show how literature can be assessed without hindering the pleasures that one can enjoy in studying it. He also lectures M.Ed students on quantitative methods and basic statistics and is a member of the Association Commonwealth Council for Educational Administration and Management and a member of the Association of Commonwealth Examination and Accreditation Bodies and also a member of the Accademia Tal Malti. He's presently reading for a doctorate degree at the University of Bath, which he's going to tell us much more about after having successfully been awarded the MPhil degree from the same university. Welcome, Mr. Cutajar.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'd like to give a little bit of a background to our listeners of a little bit of a sort of potted bio. I suppose it's always a bit rather unsettling to have your academic life sort of said in two paragraphs. But with the time that we have at hand, unfortunately, that's all we can really do. As I said, today we're going to talk a little bit about your MPhil. What exactly is the title of the study?
Well, the title is An Analysis of Inter-School Working in State-Maintained Colleges in the Maltese Islands, which in reality, this was not the title I started off with.
Often does change as you go along.
And as I met, because I mean something interesting, which helped me in the sense that when I went to Cyprus to present a paper there, I met, without having met him before, but I knew who he was, Professor James, my supervisor, and he was giving a paper there. So we spent the 3 days of the conference, when we had time, discussing planning how to go about. And when I went there with the proposal of my title, he started sort of thinking twice about it. And that's where the change actually started from, because I went with the idea of networking rather than analysis of inter-school working. Why? The reason is, as I gathered, as I got to know Chris more, is that he is interested in leadership and collaboration. And obviously, as you may have heard and known from other programs that you've interviewed, other guests that you've interviewed, sometimes the supervisor conditions the researcher.
Very often, yes.
So obviously I had to, which I find it interesting because it is still allowing me to study the networks in the education in Malta. a field that I've always loved because I haven't put it down in my short bio, is that I have been a teacher for the past 32 years. I'm not, you know, sort of trying to hide my age, but I am 58, soon to retire, but I intend to go on studying. And
well, that's a very good aim to have, to keep on. Nowadays, 60, of course, is really still very young. Everything's relative. I'm not quite 58, but I'm almost. In the beginning, when you started off your university education, you actually did an arts degree. So then, at a certain point, you moved away from the arts into education. How did that quite come about?
Well, as I said, after I graduated in a BA general degree in Maltese, and at the time it was as well classical culture and civilization, I started as a part-time teacher in state schools. And I was intrigued by, it was at a time where there was turmoil, where there was, changes happening regularly. And obviously, seeing students who, when they confront you, when the age, school leaving age was 14, and all of a sudden they realize, come September, they have another 2 years to go, it was a field which I started interesting myself in. And I kept on studying, I kept on reading about education and getting, then I did my PGCE, which was in 1978, and in 1979 became a full-timer. So I spent quite a bit of a number of years as a part-timer. Then I became interested as well in when the University of Malta started to hold examination sessions under the umbrella of the university, and they were called at the time MedSec and SEC. I was also at a certain time an examiner, paper setter, and even a chairman. And during my tenure as a chairman, I was doing my MMed degree. And as a title, I chose the Maltese SCC. And over there, I tried to establish a compromise, if you want to call it, where between education and art. So I did not abandon Maltese. I love Maltese. And it irritates me when I see errors on official papers and newspapers. They irritate me, and I phone in and let them know about their mistakes.
Jolly, jolly good thing too. I don't even attempt to write anything Maltese myself. So,
I did not, in reality, abandon arts because it's still close to my heart. But I wanted to branch off into another field, which I find it very intriguing and interesting.
Why did you choose, though, the college reform? You were looking into, you're talking about networking communication between. Well, what made you go for that particular reform?
Well, actually, at the time that I decided to study the reforms, there were a number of views appearing in our local newspapers, and even the minister. Parliament discussions going on in Parliament, and even there were a number of skeptical views regarding embarking on this reform of the college reforms will actually help our system. Prior to this, going back to 1999, I believe, where there was the launching of the National Minimum Curriculum. And the launching of that brought or introduced better the system of the centralization. As you know, our system of education was purely centralized. In fact, the education division was in reality, everything had to go through the education division.
All roads led there,
and whatever, everything came out of there. But then, with the introduction of the curriculum, in fact, when there was the introduction of that, there were the setup of focus groups, where obviously members of the focus groups were those that discussed the different subjects, the different areas that actually were taught in our state schools. And I heard once the minister saying that he had always had this dream. The minister, today is the Speaker of the House of Parliament, the ex-minister, where I believe I've never seen in my years anyway, a minister who had the children and education so much at heart. He spoke so passionately about it. And in fact, he started thinking about the reform because he could not understand why the Maltese population was losing faith in the state schools, because there was a time where many a family was sending and trying hard to send, even at financial burden and difficulties, to send their children to church schools, to independent schools and private schools.
In a way, although obviously one can appreciate the vision of the person concerned, and really there has to be research such as your own to be able to look at a policy like that and to be able to look at it scientifically, really, as much as is possible, obviously, within the context of this particular type of research. So you were going in there with what aim, really, when it came to your research?
Okay. To start with, the aim of my research, and that is why the title had changed Interschool Working, because the aim is to analyze the nature of collaboration between schools. It is not a question of having networks, but you need the schools if they are going to form a group under one college, okay? They need to collaborate. Now, if you look at the history of our system, where, as I said before, it was centralized, so obviously you had the teacher in isolation. The teacher was the king, sort of his own classroom. And whatever went on in the classroom was secretive. He did not discuss, he did not reveal. Very few did, in fact, reveal or talk about their method of teaching. And obviously this showed that there was no collaboration whatsoever. And what I want to show is that the new state-maintained colleges, you know, provide an opportunity to analyze joint working, okay, in a policy context that requires joint working by individual institutions. However, my aim, you might say, is dual. In what way? I have a primary and a secondary. The primary is obviously collaboration, which is, what is the nature of collaboration in a policy context that requires joint working by individual schools. So this is what I am actually analyzing. But then I go on to the subsidiary research questions that bring out the aim, because what I am researching, what I am studying are the implications for leadership and management of the institutions involved in the context of such collaboration. Okay, so what kind of leadership and management will we have in this structure, in this collaborative structure? Another one would be the implications for the governance and governing of the institutions involved, because I don't know whether you're aware of is that every college has its own administrative structure. Every college will have a board of governors, will have a principal, will have a council of heads. I mean, that's in a nutshell is how the structure of each college will be. So obviously there's the question of governance and governing, where before governance and governing, in a centralized system, you had only the education and the head answered to the director, okay, and the teachers answered to the head and the director general. Now it's different, where the teacher answers to the council of heads, and the council of heads answer to the principal, and the principal will answer to the board of governors, and the but mainly to the directorates.
So what you were looking at these different angles on the same story on this college networking or collaboration, and you were trying to analyze how it was working in practice.
Yes.
First one had the sort of theory and it was tried out, but then you were looking at what is actually happening.
Uh-huh. Because, I mean, I wanted to go into the field, actually, to actually feel what, I mean, the law itself, the law that was, I mean, published in 2006, that was enacted, not published, sorry, in 2006, I mean, actually speaks about collaboration, where it says collaboration not only amongst colleges, not only amongst teachers, but also with the wider community. It speaks about collaboration with the amongst teachers and college, because where part 5 of the amendment, the law, states this, part 5, section 51D, promote dialogue and a team culture among the heads and school staff through cooperation. So it spells out very clearly, it's crystal clear that there has to be collaboration. This is written in black and white. And the other one, which is, I would say, fairly new, because, in fact, it was always, I've always seen this, the parents had no access to the school. The access they had was by permission. Those who later on entered forcibly, they entered the school forcibly, and obviously attacked teachers and so on. But as far as where teacher wanted, he could not go, you know, sort of become a member of a council until later on.
Weren't there always the Parent-Teachers Association?
No, there weren't always the Parent-Teachers Association. It started much later. In fact, I think it started, I stand to be corrected, but this is what I think. It started after the 1984 strike, where there was then, at the time, where the teachers went on strike, and the government brought in parents to look after the children. And obviously it is from there that the idea started of having school councils, where the parents participated. And the school council was made up of members of staff, the head and the... But over here it says, promote the implementation of the national partnership policy of parents in school development and in the educational experience of their children, and create an effective homeschool partnership. So this is stated clearly in the law. Another thing is, I mean, which fosters this idea of cooperation with the wider population with the outside school is that the board of governors, they will be nominated, you know, not selected by the minister, okay, from the academic sector, but they will come from all sectors of society, businessmen, okay, academics obviously, and all spheres of society, because like I've read and I've come to believe that all parents have invested interest, and since they have invested interest in that particular college, because that is where they are sending their children, so obviously involving the parents is a move in the right direction. It should take us forward and not in any way, I believe, hinder us. And I've seen this and noticed this from the data that I've collected from the phase one of my research.
In fact, to go to the data, really, when you were designing this methodology, what were the main phases of the research?
Well, to start with, something new. When I started this research, because as I said, I went to Professor James with a different perspective, a different idea. Why? Because my MMed research was a mixed methodology, where it was more quantitative rather than qualitative. Now, Professor James prefers only qualitative. So all of a sudden, I had to change. And I had to change, why? Because it was going to be a case study. And no, it wasn't going to be a mixed methodology as I had done in my MMed. So obviously, it was. Now, the idea was, I mean, the various phases is this. Getting one is which, I mean, every researcher knows, but this obviously I would say it from here to the students who are embarking on research. In fact, as you mentioned, I do research methods would be it. And when I start, you know, lecturing about the stages that one has to go through before actually collecting the data, they'll be surprised. They have no idea what it involves. You need access. And access is not easy to get into the schools, because in reality, the fact that now you've got the colleges, and each college has its own, not control, but
it's you can... It's a bit, really.
You may say it's its own dominance to a certain extent. The students need to get clearance from the education division. But that doesn't mean that they have access into a college. They need the clearance of the principal. And even though the principal may give them access, they need as well access into the school. So you need to go through all these steps in order to gain access into a school. Now, regarding this study, I have to say I had an advantage, because the principal of this particular college, I worked with him, I taught with him, so he was a colleague of mine, he knew me well, and he knew me also, I mean, on socially, because we knew each other quite well. And obviously, that gave me a head start.
He felt comfortable.
Yes, he felt that he could trust me with what I was doing.
Really,
it is all about trust, because we have to understand that there is the question of confidentiality and anonymity. Ethics today is important. I mean, in fact, even the University of Malta has an ethics committee where this was set up extremely recently. Before, there was no an ethics committee. So this is important. So one has to go through, and also I had to prove to the interviewees, okay, that they can trust me. I had to win their trust. So, obviously, the various stages, I did a number of interviews. And I interviewed the Minister of Education. I interviewed, at the time, yes, it was just beginning because my study started in October 2006. And at the time, there was the launching of the pilot project. Although the directorates were not functioning yet because we still had only one director general, but when the directorates were in place, I interviewed one of the directorates, and then obviously the principal and the heads and the teachers. Here I have to say that I couldn't interview all the teachers, so what I did was I went to the heads and asked them to select for me two or three teachers from each school. The small schools, I took two teachers. The large schools, I interviewed three teachers.
Well, we've spoken about the bits that went well. What were the main difficulties, in a few words?
Well, the main difficulties was traveling. Another difficulty, which was painstaking, was transcribing. What I found enlightening as well, the non-verbal reaction. I mean, you know.
Did you manage to video anything, in fact?
No, but I remember quite a bit. And there were quite a few, you know, I mean, there were quite a few teachers who had not as yet grasped because this is, I must say, that when I carried out the first phase of my data, there were only four colleges in place. And obviously, teachers were not as informed as they should have been because it was still in the pilot stage, early days.
In a few words, in the last seconds that we have, unfortunately, the time always passes far too quickly. The future of this research, you're moving on now.
Yes, as you've said, I mean, in January of 2009, I was given the MPhil degree, awarded the MPhil degree by the University of Bath. But this was the first phase. The second phase involves me studying two colleges in Malta on the same lines that I have studied the first college. And obviously then, after I have collected all that data, and that is another thing why I will be going back to College 1 again.
Mm.
Why? To see the perceptions that have changed. Because you need to have a level playing field.
Well, thank you very, very much, Mr. Mario Cotellar, for coming to talk to us about this fascinating research. I'm sure it was really interesting for the listeners because anything to do with education is always a very hot topic out there amongst our audience. Thank you so much.
Thank you.